Hi there, this is Dr. Ali Benazir of TaoofDating.com, and welcome to the interview with Olivia Fox Caban, author of the brand spanking new book, The Charisma Myth, How Anyone Can Master the Art and Science of Personal Magnetism. Let's join the interview, already in progress.
So, this is kind of the concentrated essence of work that Olivia has been doing with individuals, corporations, statesmen, just entire countries, to get them to be more effective in their interactions with other people. And the general the umbrella term for all this is to increase their charisma. You're going to say that this has many components to it. To give a little introduction on Olivia and her work, she's lectured at Harvard, Yale, Stanford, MIT, and the UN. She's a frequent keynote speaker and executive coach to the leadership of the Fortune 500. And from a base of science and the latest in behavioral science, Olivia brings out the most practical tools for business, giving her clients techniques she originally developed for Harvard and MIT. And she's been featured in Forbes, New York Times, Business Week, and the Wall Street Journal. And after her book comes out, she's going to be in even more demand. So we're very lucky to have her today, on the day before the release of her book. Olivia, thanks so much for being here.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure.
Fantastic. So let's talk about the genesis of the book. So what compelled you to come up with the book?
I really didn't have a choice, to tell you the truth. This was one of the cases where being by nature a socially inept, awkward introvert, I realized around age, I think it was 18, that I had two choices. Either I exiled myself to a desert island, or I figured this whole social thing out. So I took the second option.
Well, now, what would you say about the title of the book? Because when I first saw the title, it's called The Charisma Myth.
Oh, and we've had conversations about this.
I mean?
Ellie and I have had long debates about the title.
So what's the myth? What's the deal?
So the myth is that charisma is innate and that it can't be learned. That's what the current myth believes about charisma. The truth is that actually it's a social skill that is simply learned at a very young age. And like many other social skills, because it's learned so young, by the time they get to adulthood, which is when we usually get to know people, it seems innate. But actually, just like really driving or dancing for some people, it can be learned later in life fairly easily.
So, yeah, in fact, I got emails from my readers saying, hey, I thought that charisma, either have it or you don't. And, you know, the way I think about it is that, well, it's like a job. You either have it or you don't. But it wasn't innate. That's not something you were born with. You worked on it. You got it. So we have a lot of really cool information to get through, and I'm going to try to extract as many great nuggets you guys can use. And so what would your definition of charisma be, Olivia?
That's a good question, because everyone has their own definition. Mine, personally, is that charisma is something that makes people like you, trust you, and want to do whatever it is that you want them to do. Others say that charisma is essentially that quality that means that when you move through a room, people go, wow, who's that? Charisma is essentially a slightly magical aura. And again, the wonderful thing is that we've now learned that it is not innate. It's simply a behavior. It's a set of behaviors that people pick up early in life, and then they keep refining them as they grow up so that by the time they reach adulthood, for most of them, it's second nature. But if you look at people like Steve Jobs, he painstakingly developed his charisma at a later date, and he methodically went about acquiring it. So you can see the transition from 84 to his last presentation. You can see him learn every bit of his charisma step by step.
Also, this is very encouraging news, because the whole idea is this something that even I could do? I mean, people think of charisma, they think of, oh, Bill Clinton, he's just born on that way. So, the good news is that, hey, you tack on these behaviors, and eventually they become a part of you. And so, the idea is that once you do these things on a regular basis, then it is you, and people won't know the difference. One of my favorite parts of the book is the final chapter. I think one of the best ways that people learn is through illustrative examples, like the case of James, which you'd be willing to share part of the story.
Yes. James is one of my favorite students. He was your quintessential accountant, and the day he walked into my office, he was kind of shuffling, looking small and floating in his clothes and really looking about as nerdy and uncharismatic as an accountant can look. And within very, very, very few sessions, I think I saw him 4 times maybe. Within session 1 or 2, he had gone into a complete metamorphosis. This guy was still James, but just walking with a completely new presence, poise, power. It was amazing. The guy transformed.
And what was the time frame of that transformation?
So for James, it was very short. We're talking a couple of weeks at most. But this is someone who decided to throw himself into this heart and soul. Other people take longer. It really depends how much time you're willing to put into this and what kind of charisma you're going to want to adopt, because there's no one form of charisma, just like there's no one form of personality or there's no one form of leadership. And it's really going to be a question of which style or styles, with an S, plural, of charisma do you want to gain? How far is this style or are these styles from your natural persona? And that determines how long it's going to take you to integrate them.
Excellent.
It's really a question of how far out of your comfort zone are you willing to go.
Like any form of growth, it has to be
yes.
A little uncomfortable first. Well, That's great, and that's very encouraging, because when I read the story of James, I was like, okay, this guy is the quintessential uncharismatic person, and the transformation was so drastic, so dramatic that all of his coworkers noticed. So if you were to break down charisma component-wise, what would you see? What would you say goes into it?
Charisma is really built of three main building blocks. The first is presence. This is the foundation on which everything else lies, and it's quite simply your ability to be fully present in the moment and pay complete attention to the person that you're with. And when you think of the great charismatic masters, when people speak of Bill Clinton, when they speak of even the Dalai Lama, they say that they give you the impression of being completely there for you and that you are the most important person in the world. So presence is something that we cannot fake. Because if you've ever had the impression, the experience of being only half present in the conversation while your mind was busy wandering elsewhere, I can guarantee that the other person facing you could spot that, at least on a subconscious basis, because as soon as your mind wanders, there's a slight delay in your facial expressions and a slight glazing on your eyes that people will catch, because people are incredibly fast at catching your facial expressions. So essentially, you can't fake presence. You better really be there.
All right, so presence would be just giving your
attention. It's simple. It's being entirely present in the conversation, have the moment-to-moment awareness of who it is you're speaking to, what they're saying, and what's happening.
Right, as opposed to, say, fidgeting, looking to the side, looking for your friend, checking your cell phone.
Well, as opposed to any distraction, whether it be external, like looking at your phone or looking at it over their shoulder, or internal, such as thinking of what you're going to say next or what you just said or something else entirely. Whether it's an internal or an external distraction, our thoughts are a great internal distraction, any distraction is going to show on your... Yep? I was just saying any distraction is going to show on your face and be picked up by the person facing you.
Right, yeah, and that people pick up on that very quickly. By the way, if I may interrupt for a moment, are you using a speakerphone or are you on a regular phone? Are you not using
speakerphone? I'm not using a speakerphone. I can try. I'm in San Francisco, so the curse of the iPhone is that at the home of Apple, it's one of the worst receptions possible. Is this any better?
Yeah, your voice is a little difficult to decipher, so I'm hoping we can make that a little more. Coherent. Okay, fantastic. Okay, so next component.
The next one would be power, and power is not in the way that you traditionally think about it, i.e., who's, you know, who can bring an army down, but it's really how much power you broadcast through your body language, because that's how we measure power. We measure it through other people's reaction to the person. We measure it through, of course, signs of status like titles, rank, or whatever office they occupy. But we measure it most of all through how confident they seem, because we tend to do test work when we meet people. If someone appears confident, we assume that they have something to be confident about. In essence, people will accept whatever you project.
Excellent. That's a very good definition of power. Okay, and the third component?
The third would be warmth. And warmth is a bit tricky for most of us. A lot of us are uncomfortable with warmth. It's not an emotion that we're adept at spending a lot of time in, let alone broadcasting. Warmth is the ability to simply put, feel warmth for whoever it is that you want to be charismatic towards. And they're very accessing it, but the way that the person is going to read it is, of course, through your body language, but more specifically through your eyes and through your voice. And the eyes, for example, Jackie Kennedy was famous for being able to broadcast warmth entirely through her eyes without needing to smile at all. On the other hand, someone, for example, with a nasal voice is going to have a handicap in broadcasting warmth because nasal voices tend to be colder.
Right. Well, that's interesting. And it's very encouraging that something as fundamental as warmth is also amenable to being learned and being improved upon, because a lot of people, I
think,
have some kind of warmth, but it's a matter of being able to actually broadcast that.
Yes. It's also a question of how much discomfort you're willing to endure, because you know what, for some people, warmth is comfortable and they'll be happy playing around in it. For other people like me, warmth is icky, it's messy, it's emotional. We're comfortable in our heads and we'd like to stay there. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I know people who are not comfortable with warmth. They're called guys.
Nicely
so,
done, Ali.
So great. And so give me some examples of who's really good at presence, who's really good at power, who's really good at warmth, because I think people learn well through example.
Yeah, and actually that's a good way to look at it. You need all three components, presence and power and warmth, to be charismatic. But then dependent on which of these elements is stronger, you get different kinds of charisma. So, for example, people who have very high power, that would be your classic dictator. And you know what? Hitler was very charismatic. Someone who has very high warmth is the complete opposite. We're talking the Dalai Lama here. And then someone who has very high presence, it's something that's called focus charisma. Elon Musk, the founder of PayPal, is one of the guys I interviewed for the book, and he's a classic example of focus, i.e. high presence charisma. When you're in a conversation with him, he absorbs every word you say like a sponge, and you can feel the intensity of his listening. Now, on the other hand, if you take someone like Oprah, she's going to blend different kinds of charisma, not just in one show, but sometimes in one conversation, because there's no form of charisma that's ever always good or always bad per se. It's only a question of what is the right one for the situation, meaning who you are, what's natural to you, who your audience is, what they're going to take to, and what you're trying to achieve.
Oh my, that's a lot to keep track of all of a sudden. Okay. so let's do it on case-by-case basis. Let's say you're doing a business presentation. What would you think is the best kind of charisma to be projecting in that situation?
You can go with a fair number of them. Focus charisma would work. Power charisma would work. You can also switch depending on which part of the presentation you're giving at the moment. When you're taking Q&A, focus charisma is a good idea because you really want to be focused on them and listening. When you're suggesting the option that you think is the best, authority charisma would be a good bet. I think it's really more a question of what is the exact outcome you want for that moment. Focus charisma gets people to tell you stuff. It gets them to share, to open up. Warmth charisma gets them to like you. So, for example, Clinton is famous for leading with warmth. Authority charisma gets them to obey. They all have their downsides, right? So
authority charisma gets people to obey, but it really discourages feedback and creative thinking, so it's very bad for a brainstorming session. Focus charisma is great for getting people to tell you everything they know or everything that you want them to tell you, but it's not as good for spurring people to action.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's actually good to know, because people think charisma is something that's, you know, like chocolate.
It's not monolithic. No, it's not one block.
Yes. So and different flavors work differently for different situations. So I've promised my listeners that we will give them Insta Charisma boosters. So are you ready for the first one?
Am I giving them or are you giving them, Ali?
No, you are. I'm saying, are you ready to give the listeners the
sure, there are a lot of them. So one of my favorites is on the power spectrum. The quickest route to broadcasting more power through your body language is to play the big gorilla.
This means
to get yourself in. This means to make yourself as big as possible, whether it be by stretching your. Before you're in a conversation, not in the presence of someone, but standing up, stretching your arms towards the ceiling, then towards the sides of the room, and then breathing in and inflating to make yourself as big as possible. The other thing is that even when you're in a conversation, a fascinating thing that Stanford researchers found is that confident, high-status alpha people use furniture, quote-unquote, wrong. They sit on chairs. They put their feet on the desk. They sit on the desk. They sit on the edge of the desk with their feet on the chair, they drape themselves over two chairs. All of this is an attempt to take up more space, to claim space. So that would be the tip number one. Be the big gorilla. Take space.
Fantastic. All right, everybody, let's do it right now. So wherever you are right now, I want you to listen to Olivia's instructions and take more space. So Olivia, take it away. Tell them what to do.
So if you stand up first, and then kind of jiggle your arms and legs and
legs wide. All right, here we go.
And just make sure that nothing is in your way, but just shake up your arms and legs, shake up your body. Then stretch your fingers towards the ceiling. Try to touch the ceiling with your fingers or the sky if you're outside. Now bring your arms and hands to the side of the room and try to touch the sides of the room with your fingertips. And then your arms fall by the sides. Now you're going to roll your shoulders up and then back. And as you do so, breathe in the biggest breath you possibly can. And imagine yourself as a five-star general reviewing his troops. You're going to clasp your hands behind your back and open your feet up to a slightly wider stance. This is going to give you a posture of confidence. And the way that physiology affects psychology, this will actually measurably increase the chemicals flowing through your body that boost the feeling of confidence. And by the way, if you haven't yet started breathing again, please do so now.
Oh, yeah, the whole breathing thing, right? Okay.
So that's it. That's one simple way to gain more power in your body language.
Wow. I know about the rest of the audience because I can't see them, but I feel fantastic. Compared to 90 seconds ago, it's just the expansiveness of the feeling is definitely palpable. And you guys are listening. How fast was that? That's like 1 minute. Your state has changed dramatically. I especially like that visualization of reviewing your troops. So as they all salute you and you kind of benevolently nod and say yes, fine work. great. Okay, so that was great. Let's do the second one.
Well, if you can, and if you're in an environment where you can close your eyes, this is one of my favorite, to get to warmth.
If you are driving,
so all you need
do not
to...
do this. Do not close your eyes. If you are driving.
Listen to what Dr. Ali says. Don't do this while driving. But close your eyes and think of one being, whether present or past, mythical or actual, whether it be Buddha, Jesus, God, Mother Teresa, or the Dalai Lama, whether it be a being, a person, a pet, or even a stuffed animal. Any being that you have some affection for or that you feel could have had great affection for you. And now all you need to do is imagine this being in front of you and see their affection for you radiating out towards you, and see if you can let it wrap itself around you. Drink that warmth in as much as you can.
Right.
And the next time that you're speaking to someone towards whom you would like to feel warmth, you can do this quick visualization just before, and or you can do any visualization that helps you get to warmth. Some of my clients, including hard and seasoned executives, tend to see the other person with angel wings, and they tell themselves, this is my angel, and he or she needs my help. I tell my clients, I don't care what you have to do to get to warmth, get there. Whatever visualization it takes for you to get there, whoever it is you need to think of, whatever it is you need to think of, anything that will get you to warmth will measurably increase your charisma.
That's fantastic. I definitely feel a difference. And the beauty of the visualizations is that nobody else knows about them. So even if it's something as goofy as angel wings on people, you know what? If it works, use it. So you know, I did that, and I heard Lydia talk about that at one of her speeches, and it worked. It's cool. All right, and let's give them a third one.
Well, then let's go for presence. That would be a nice roundup. And favorite quick way to get into presence is to think of your toes. And the reason for this is that as soon as you focus on the physical sensation of your toes, it forces your mind to sweep through your entire body and gets you very physically present in the moment. And you can do this many times per call, any time that you need to get back into the moment. That's it. It takes about half a second, and it'll get you physically present.
Think of my toes. Is there a less smelly part of the body we could think about, or toes? It has to be toes.
It really does help for it to be the toes, because if it's going to be any other part of your body, you don't get that same full body sweep that you get with the toes, which is really the extremity of your body at this moment.
I guess toes make sense, because if you're thinking of the toes, then you kind of have to think about everything between the head and the toes.
Right.
The impulse has to go all the way down there to the very, very end of your body.
Pretty much, yeah.
Excellent. Wow. Okay. I feel great. So let me open the lines up and see if people have some questions up to this point. So let's see. Technology, please be my friend. Here we go.
Conference muted.
All right, how you doing, everybody?
Great.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, great. Good. So, any quick questions for this halfway point? If you have a question, hit 5-star, and I'll know it is your question. Your hand will raise electronically, and then I can ask. Okay, no questions, then we will carry on.
Conference muted.
And let's get Olivia back in here. All right, fantastic. All right, moving right along. So, charisma is a powerful thing. And so as you're doing this stuff, is it possible to overdo it?
Well, the only times when it's possible to overdo it is when you're doing something that's going against your values or something that you're deeply, deeply, fundamentally uncomfortable with. Because in that case, the discomfort and the awkwardness will show on your face.
Mm-hmm.
And even when we control the main expression on our face, if what we're feeling underneath is too widely different, there's something that's called a micro-expression that's going to flash across our face. And even if it's as fast as 17 to 32 milliseconds, the other person will catch that, because that is how fast people read your face.
Mm-hmm. The micro expressions that I was listening to a Paul Ekman talk on Saturday, and he's a micro expression guy, and it's true. I mean, the stuff is all happening at such a deep and conscious level that if you think you can try to control it, it's already beyond hope. You need to get the entire physiology aligned such that you can actually broadcast the right thing. Speaking of broadcasting the right message, one of the parts of the book that I really like was the perfect handshake. Would you be willing to share with us?
Yes. I'm trying to think how we're going to do this without any visuals. So essentially,
the handshake is a symbol for there not being any weapons hidden. So what you're trying to do when you're shaking hands at very gut level to show people that you are not hiding anything. Therefore, what you're trying to do is to get maximum palm contact so that you can show that there are no weapons hidden anywhere on a subconscious level. The way you do that is to point your hand at a slightly downward angle, open wide the space between all your fingers so you get maximum grip, and then wrap your hands around theirs. It's almost as if you were giving their hand a hug with yours. And yes, it will feel intimate. Especially women, please, women, listen to this. You want to go slightly stronger than you think you should. Women have far too weak a handshake just from experience. You essentially shake once or twice and let go, and let go.
And then let go. And how about lingering? What's the word on lingering? Holding the handshake a little bit longer than expected.
So holding the handshake one beat longer is a good modern equivalent of the really to be avoided double-handed politician's handshake. It's something that you should use sparingly because it's there to make a point. If you make it too often, it loses any power.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a big component of making that powerful first impression. Now, one of the reasons that I really like this book is that it's really not—it's not just about charisma. It's about your entire emotional life in a way, and charisma, the way that you broadcast your emotional state to the world, the way you make other people feel. There's a lot of preamble to that. There's a lot of preparation for that. So tell us a little bit about the power of visualization.
That's actually one of the silver bullets in charisma training, and I know, Ali, it's something that you teach because you're an expert hypnotherapist. I'm losing my English, an expert hypnotherapist. Visualization is something that you can use to get into pretty much any state you want as long as you have the right image. So it's up to you to decide what emotional or mental state do I want to get into and then choose the image accordingly. So if you want to get into a state of confidence where you can broadcast power, all you have to do is go back and imagine, as Ali, I know you've had us do in previous experiences, in seminars with you, imagine an event where you felt completely confident on top of the world. And because your brain does not know the difference between imagination and reality, it will send the same cascade of chemicals through your veins as it would if the event had actually happened, and that will affect your body language in turn.
Mm-hmm. And how long does that kind of thing take?
Visualization can be as fast as 10 seconds. It can be as long as an hour if you want to go all the way into guided imagery. But really, with just a few seconds, you'll have most of what you need to get a measurable charisma boost.
Right. And what I love about Olivia's work is this is, yes, there's a lot of empirical evidence. You've done this stuff, and it works. So fully supported by the literature. So what is the scientific take on the effectiveness of visualization?
It's quite frighteningly effective in the sense that we can detect a measurable change in the motor cortex of the brain, i.e., when people visualize certain actions repeatedly, there was a measurable change in a physical change in their brain. You can essentially rewire your brain at will. You can change the shape of your brain by repeatedly using certain visualizations.
You can change the shape of your brain?
You can. You really can.
And is it true that athletes have used visualization extensively, even exclusively, and improved their training?
Yes. There's the famous basketball studies where athletes were divided into three groups, one that actually, threw a ball and practiced basketball, another group that did nothing, and a third group that didn't actually practice basketball physically, but did visualizations every day for the same amount of time as others were actually practicing. When the two groups were brought back together, this was an Australian study, they were almost identically improved, those who had actually played, from those who had just visualized.
Wow. That's yeah, there's no denying that. And by the way, to the listeners, you've already done at least two visualization exercises, and you already saw how it worked. Right? You were a general imagining your troops, and then, you know, you imagine that you were a big old gorilla, and, you know, and you, well, actually three now, I think, but there's also, you know, visualizing somebody who cares for you, whom you care for, and being enveloped by their warmth, and notice how quickly that changed your state. This is not conjecture. This is very real, and the goal of this call is to turn these good ideas into good behaviors and also good habits eventually. So to that end, I encourage you to get yourself a copy of the Charisma Myth, and that way you have the reference. And, you know, just jot down on a little note card, I'm going to do these three things. Right? I'm going to stand like a big gorilla. I'm going to imagine, you know, viewing my troops. I'm going to stand like in jumping jack position, raise my hands to the sky so I feel expanded. It's all about doing any one of these things on a regular basis makes a huge, huge difference. And that one thing becomes a lever by which you can change your whole demeanor, your whole behavior. That's really powerful. Speaking of changing your whole demeanor and behavior, one of the really powerful aspects of the book was practices for neutralizing negativity. So tell us about why that's important and maybe give us two or three of the techniques that work really well for you, Olivia.
Sure. The reason, well, one of the many reasons that it's important is that negativity doesn't just make us feel crappy. It also impairs our actual performance, but it also really affects our body language. And when, for example, you're in the middle of a conversation and you say something and all of a sudden your brain goes, "Oh, that was stupid," what's going to happen first, your face is going to wince. And second, as you start beating yourself up mentally, you're going to start feeling self-criticism, self-judgment, tension, etc. And, of course, your face, since you know that you can't hide these things, micro-expressions of tension, criticism, and judgment are going to be floating across your face. Now, these are all directed towards yourself. But the person you're speaking to doesn't know that. All they know is that while they were speaking with you, interacting with you, etc., they accurately read tension, criticism, coldness, and judgment across your face. So they're naturally going to assume that it's about them.
By the way,
realized I was just giving you the downside of the negativity, and this is why it's bad for you, which I think is something you'll fairly easily understand. One of those that Ali and I actually like to talk about particularly is called the imposter syndrome, which is a feeling you get that you don't really know what you're talking about, and it's just a matter of time before you're found out and exposed as a fraud. And this is something that is actually fairly prevalent, and it hits 70 to 80% of the population, particularly amongst those who are slightly more intelligent than average. And in fact, the higher up the level of intelligence you go, the worse it gets. So every time I speak at MIT, for example, I know that the imposter syndrome there is endemic. This is one of the kinds of negativity that can really impair your charisma.
Right, and generally speaking, the better you are at what you do, and the higher up you are, the more persistent the imposter syndrome tends to be.
Yes, yes. And the current theory is that this is because the more you know, the more you're also aware of the sum total of knowledge that there is to know and how small your own seems in comparison.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. By the way, could you, the sound quality got deteriorated a little bit. If you could bring the speaker.
Let me move again. Yep.
So,
yep,
yeah, the microphone a little closer would be great because for a while it was really sharp. It was really good. All right, good. So let's can we share a couple of techniques on neutralizing negativity?
Well, actually, yes. It's a fairly three-step process. We've just undertaken step number one, which is to destigmatize it by saying, you know what, this is normal, and we don't have time on the call today, but just understand that it's a fairly normal legacy of your genetic heritage, just like your appendix. Sometimes your appendix gets inflamed and you get an appendicitis. Sometimes your imposter syndrome acts up and you get an attack with the imposter syndrome. Step number two is to detach from your negative thoughts. The way you do this is by understanding that your thoughts are not necessarily real at all. Just because a thought is in your head doesn't mean that it has any validity whatsoever. So, for example, not that long ago, we were convinced that the Earth was flat. We now have changed our minds. Our thoughts are just thoughts. They're just little electric impulses whizzing around your brain. And again, we're a bit too short on time for me to explain the science, but please trust me when I say that your thoughts not only are not necessarily accurate, they are by nature distorted because your brain's job is to filter the overwhelming amount of information that you get and to present you only with what it deems to be important. And thanks to your survival instinct, what your brain thinks to be important is usually what it thinks is dangerous, negative, or could kill you. So you can imagine what sort of slightly negatively warped picture your brain is sending you on a constant basis for your own survival. The third step is to rewrite. And this one's a fairly simple one. And the example I give in this case is if you imagine that you're driving on a freeway at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning, and all of a sudden a huge black car swerves in the lane in front of you, almost cuts you off, almost runs you off the freeway, and then proceeds to swerve in and out of the other car's way, and then finally exits the freeway. Allie, if that happened, would you be at least a little bit annoyed?
Yes.
Okay. So when that happens, most people get fairly upset, and they get adrenaline coursing through their veins, cortisol, and other stress hormones, which really are bad for you. Now, what if you knew, you suddenly learned through a fluke coincidence that that big black car was actually driven by a distraught mother whose baby was choking in the back seat, and it was all she could do to even keep the car on the highway in an attempt to save the baby's life? Would that immediately change your perspective and your state?
Yeah, I feel like a jerk.
Well, most people, at least, it removes the anger, and they get more understanding.
Right. No. Exactly.
And
like, okay,
my point is that in most situations in life, you don't know if there was a baby in the back seat. You don't know what lies behind what people are saying or doing. And in most situations in life, as long as it is useful to you, you might as well choose whichever explanation of reality makes you more charismatic, i.e. makes you feel better. So that would be the third point, and I realize we've just hit the mark for Q&A, and so, Ali, I think I'm ready to take any questions that anyone has.
We have questions by email, and you can still send them to me. I send them to Dr. Ali at TaoBing.com. I am checking them obsessively, so if it comes in, I'll take it. We also have you do a little hand-raising, so the hand-raising gesture is 5-star on your phone. You put 5-star, then a little electronic hand goes up here, and I know it's you, and I will unmute you. Oh, look, we have all kinds of questions. It's fabulous. So to summarize, so destigmatizing, that's very important. And really, it's about reframing. You recontextualize whatever's happening, and then that thing that may have been negative suddenly isn't also negative, and you have a complete different attitude towards it. And, you know, since the brain is this storyteller, why not tell the best story that makes you feel the best, right? So
yeah, pretty much.
We'll take the first email here. So Julia says, so how do you handle being charismatic without really being a doormat or letting people feel like they can always count on you to be awesome when you really need to give yourself a pep talk to do it every time? So how do you write a charisma check you can't, how do you not write a charisma check that you can't cash?
I'm not sure I understand that question. How do you not write a charisma check that you can't cash?
Basically, I think the question is there's a downside to warmth charisma. So if you have
okay.
What can possibly happen?
So there is a downside to all forms of charisma, but more specifically to warmth charisma, which is that people will literally start falling in love with you, and not necessarily in a romantic way. They will just give you their hearts and souls. So this is where you have to measure how much warmth charisma you turn on, with whom you turn it on, and when you turn it on, because indeed, people will start to want to bend the rules for you left and right, and sometimes that's great, but sometimes it can be a bit overbearing. There's no always right, always wrong answer I can give you here, Julia, but just that it is indeed a question of for whom, when, and how. It always depends on the situation.
Got it. Okay, and before we proceed any further, so where can people get a hold of you again? And what's the story? So your book is being released in 2 days, is that correct, on the 28th?
The book is being released on Amazon, Kindle, and everywhere else, and in bookstores at midnight on the 29th. So on the day of the 29th, it's going to be available, and I'm very happy to say that Penguin is already short on stock, so they're going into second printing. The book appears to be a runaway hit.
Well, 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 what do we have here? So you guys are, you know, so basically they Can they read the book right now if they want to? Can they go and download it from the Kindle or not yet?
No. What you can do is go to my website, askolivia.com. That's askolivia.com. And for free, you can download the first few chapters, which will give you an overview of charisma and a couple of ways to get there.
Askolivia.com, spelled exactly the way you hear it. There's a couple of sample chapters. And if you guys, you got to learn a lot of great things here today. Yes, yes. And if you would like to help Olivia out, it would be tremendously useful to her and to her continuing this teaching and helping people all over the world is to go and pre-order the book. And if you pre-order the book, she gets all kinds of, boosts from that. And, then she, people will say, oh, my God, what's this book? It's shooting through the ranks. And then other people can benefit from these teachings as well. So if you could do that, that would be fantastic. So let's open up another question here. We have area code 917. That sounds like New York to me. Hello, New York City. Hello? Oh, wait, what did I just do? Okay, I just took that away. New York City, do it again. I took the question thing, but I didn't unmute you, so you can't actually speak. That's not very productive now, is it? New York City, raise your hands. Okay, there you are. Are you there? No. Okay, imperfections. Press 5-star again, the person with the 917 number, and I will unmute you. Okay, great. So we have area code 678. Hi there. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, there you are. Okay, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic. How are you doing tonight?
Superb. And what is your name?
My name is Mark.
And Mark, what is your question for Olivia?
I tend to be one of those overanalyzers.
Okay.
And sitting there as she was talking about, well, make up a story, but I'm already analyzing the story, saying that story's not true.
Mm-hmm. So what's
right.
The question?
Here's the thing that's really interesting, is that if that's the case, it looks like you've got a very quick analytical mind. You're going to have to use images. The interesting thing about images is that they get to our limbic brain faster than they get to our cortex. And so by the time your mind starts debating whether or not the image is true, it has already unleashed the positive cocktail of chemicals in your body. So I would say go for images right away for you.
Okay. So just picture the positive and then
don't
worry about the mind doing its thing because the positive.
Yeah, the mind will do its thing and that's fine. But by that time, you'll already have gotten the oxytocin boost that you needed.
Right. And the subconscious will have dealt with it and the conscious will just be there.
Exactly. That's a very good way of looking at it.
Okay. Very cool. Thank you so very much.
Sure.
Hey, Mark, thanks for calling in. Thanks for your question. All right. Next we have, let's see what we got here. Let's see. Next question is from area code 310. That looks a lot like Los Angeles. So how this works here. Hello there.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. What's your name?
Okay. Steve, I'm from L.A. You're correct in that. Olivia, thank you.
Welcome to the call. What question?
Thank you. This has been great. So I totally, absolutely agree with the visualization. I do martial arts, and it's so important to think about what moves you're going to be doing, how you're going to defend yourself. My question has to do, what are your thoughts about meditation?
You have no idea who you're talking to. All right. Let's get cracking. So, listen, I see meditation as a toolkit. In the same way that you don't use a wrench or a hammer for the same purpose, you don't use every kind of meditation. You won't use metta or vipassana for the same purpose. So meditation is all well and good, but what are you trying to do? If you're trying to get to quick bliss, I'd send you to TM, Transcendental Meditation, because you know what? There's nothing wrong with quick bliss. It's a great thing. If you're trying to get insight onto who you are, and what you're all about, and who is this being, then yeah, go straight to Vipassana, which is literally translated insight meditation. If you're trying to go for warmth, go for metta, M-E-T-T-A, which to my mind is the most powerful but also the most uncomfortable form of meditation. Vipassana and metta were both seen by the Buddha as equally potent on the road to enlightenment. but metta is a whole lot harder. It really is a question of what you want to get out of your meditation. Do you want quick bliss? Do you want peace? Do you want contentment? Do you want insight? Do you want warmth? If you want to go for Zen meditation, go for it. Zen meditation has been known in certain cases to induce certain people into schizophrenic episodes, so I tend to not recommend it. So it really depends what you're going after. Did I answer your question, Steve?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Sure thing.
Yeah, we're both big meditation fans, so that was, and actually meditation figures prominently in the book, too. So that was it's almost like we set that up, Olivia, wasn't it?
I wish. No, it's really one of the best things that you can do to boost your, well, everything, is to go on a 7 or a 10 day meditation retreat. My absolute favorite one, which is in a place more gorgeous than I can describe, is called Hollyhock, Hollyhock. It's a 10 day metta retreat in near Vancouver, and that one will change your life. But again, meditation retreats are one of the most intense experiences you can possibly have. They're wonderful, ordinary, they're intense, they are life-changing. So don't go into there lightly.
Oh boy. You may have noticed that Olivia doesn't do anything halfway, so if she's going to meditate, she does it for 10 days in a row without talking to anyone. So
actually, I do that several times a year.
Okay then. yes. But you know what? It works. So if you guys are serious about it, if you actually want to alter the structure of your brain and how you present yourself to the world for the rest of your lives, that's something you may want to consider. Steve, thank you so much for the question. So we have more questions. I'm going to unmute the lines for a second so we can actually hear the entire nation of listeners at once, because that's fun, and technology lets us do silly things like this. How y'all doing?
Fantastic.
Great.
Woo-hoo. We're having a good time? Oh, yeah. Are you learning cool things? I know there's, like, you know, at least 30, 40 of you out there. So are you learning good things?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Fantastic. So if you want to continue, you will now all in unison on the count of three say, give us some more, Olivia. So here we go.
I have at most 5 minutes left. So, yeah, I can give five more minutes, but that's about it.
Olivia.
5 more minutes, Olivia.
All right. That's about as much as I can give.
Fantastic. Here we go.
Conference muted.
All right, so what do we got here? We have at least one more question here, and this is from area code 207. Speak up, 207. What's your question?
Hey, 207, right. This is Mayor in Maine. I have a question about the book. Is it very exercise-oriented or exercise-based, or, you know, just a nice blend of exercises?
It's about half and half. So the way I like to portray it is that it has all the Malcolm Gladwell kind of fun stories and fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll hear, for example, what Napoleon did. It was amazing. When Napoleon was storming through France and the entire French army was marching towards him to take him prisoner, and he had a small band of ruffians, but he considered himself the Emperor of France. At dawn, on March 7th in Grenoble, the two armies met, and Napoleon stops his army, crosses the divide, and when he is within gunshot range of the entire massive French army, he shouts out, "Are you ready to kill your emperor? Well, if you really are, go ahead, kill me, I'm yours." And the entire French army, his enemy, shouts, "Long live the emperor," throws down their weapons, and changes sides. And they followed him in his rags to take over France. So that's the kind of stories that you'll find in the book. At the same time, you've got really practical exercises like, you know, raise this eyebrow and it's going to have this effect on the human psyche. Or if you breathe this way, or this is what you want to do when, or this color is going to have that. That pragmatic. That's the kind of blend it is.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
As a lay user who's actually read the book, I'll say, you know, it's great because it's got the text, which explains things, gives you the case studies, and it's got the exercises. And as a non-lay user, somebody who writes books like these, who loves to have exercise in there, the actual change in your behavior will come from the exercises. If you skip over the gray parts and say, oh, this is slowing down my reading. No, you do the gray parts. In fact, after you've read the book, all you want to do is go back to the gray parts and keep on doing them. Put them on a little note card, just, you know, that's the stuff that actually matters. And, you know, it's a little cheaper than having Olivia in person, which costs like megabucks per minute. So
yes.
With that, I believe we have come to the end of our Q&A period. Maybe we have time for one more.
I really have to run, Ali. I'm sorry.
You have to run? All right. We do. So everybody, let's just give a big thank you. I will unmute the lines.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Olivia.
Thank you very much. It's very interesting.
Good luck on the MadBug launch on the 29th, midnight, a couple of nights from now. And this has been the interview with Olivia Fox-Caban on the Charisma Myth. And I hope all of you guys get a chance to go and clear